Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, you might want to jump in and grab a phone line. They're filling up fast. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. Open lines tonight. Anything you want to talk about, once you're on that call, press 1, and Lisa will screen your call, and then we'll get to those questions. It's Wednesday night, so I'm going to start off with the market indexes and let you know what's going on with freight and rates, and then we'll jump right in and get to your call. So line them up right now. If you press 1, we've got a shot at getting in here pretty quick. Usually by the end of the call, we get all backed up on questions. If you jump in right now, you've got a pretty good chance. So press 1, Lisa will get to you. We'll start on those questions here soon. Pretty good week for freight. Let's start off with the Transforecast letter from the Internet Truck Stop. This is the market demand index. Actually had a great week, up 11%. Up to 8.52, it was 7.66 the previous week. Let's take a look at load availability was up 4%. Truck availability was actually down 8%. There's the 11 or 12% swing that we saw in the index. So things looking pretty good there. Rates. The overall equipment rate was up 1% to $1.87. Van rates up 1% to $1.64. Flatbed up 1% to $1.69. Specialized up 4% to $2.27. And it looks like reefer rates off 1.5% to $1.89. Let's take a look what they're predicting over there. We expect continued demand to level off for a few weeks and then begin to fall as we get into the fourth quarter. Pretty much what we would expect. As the third quarter wraps up, we should see pretty strong demand, but once we start into the numbers on the fourth quarter, we will probably see that demand drop off. Let's check what's going on over at TransCore. Spot market load availability increased by 12% in the week of September 26th through October 2nd, up 12% compared to the previous week. That gave a big boost to September's month-end numbers. September is 3.5% up from August. Spot market equipment capacity was up 8% for the week and tightened up by 1.8% when we compare September over August. For the third quarter, spot market freight volume was down by 40% compared to the first quarter. Equipment capacity was up by 20% compared to the third quarter. quarter of 2009. And spot market loads in the third quarter were up by 91% and equipment down by 27% when we compare third quarter of this year to third quarter of last year. Running through some of the numbers here for the week, spot market load index up 12%, spot market truck index up 8%, dry van load-to-truck ratio up 5.8%, flatbed load-to-truck ratio up 3.1%, reefer load-to-truck ratio up 1%, fuel price up 1.7%. That was week over week. That was comparing the week of September 26th through October 2nd to the previous week, the 19th through the 25th. If we look at the month of September, now that the numbers are in versus August, load index overall up 3.5%, truck index down 1.8%, dry van load-to-truck ratio off 1.6%, flatbed load-to-truck ratio up 18%, reefer load-to-truck ratio up 6.1%, and fuel prices just about flat at 0.7% down. So those are the numbers for this week, actually looking pretty good, about what we expect to see this time of the year. We should see that finish up strong through the end of the third quarter and then probably see it drop off for the first part of the fourth quarter here. Hopefully, we'll see that end of the year climb that we normally look for this time of year. All right, if you are listening online, you've got maybe a couple minutes here to grab a line before they fill up real close. The number to dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1. Lisa will screen your call. We'll get to those questions here. Well, we'll get to them right now. Let's get started. Let's go to Mississippi. Brent, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, I have a question on this, my latest oil analysis I just got from OPS.
Okay. And let me take a look. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, my total base number is going down to 2.91. My viscosity has gone up to 16.2, and the oxidation nitration. I don't know what. Where does the? How does that happen in oil? What's that from?
Let me look at some details here. We've got a. This is a Cummins ISX. What year?
06.
06, and you're running just straight Rotella mineral oil, correct?
Yep, just Rotella T.
How much oil are you adding?
Oh, I probably add one every 10 to 15,000 miles at a gallon.
Okay. And is this correct that the engine has 726,000 miles and the oil has 101,000?
That's correct. That's the time
okay.
The sample taking
it. Yeah, what we're seeing here then is fairly normal. I mean, I don't see anything in this sample. Are you using any kind of an additive?
No, not at all.
Okay. I wonder what maybe Rotella's changed something. They keep flagging magnesium as high, which is an additive. It doesn't really. You can ignore
right.
that. Yeah, just
well,
ignore that.
You looked at the analysis before this, and you know, when I had them put in, and when I did the first oil change on this, I told them to put Cherotel in, but I'm not sure if they did, but I've been adding it myself. So
okay.
I know I've been adding it, so I don't know what they put in on that. That's why.
Yeah, that might have been, and the magnesium is actually going down.
Right.
Which indicates that they put something other than Rotella in. And now as you're refilling with Rotella, it's bringing it down to what it should be. So we can ignore that one. Lead is one of the items flagged at a severity 2, but I really, it's a pretty standard progression here. You had one jump from the third to the fourth sample, but, you know, nothing to get concerned about. And again, that's just, silicone is a little high, but just barely. What, do you have standard paper filter in this, air filter?
Yeah. Yeah, and as soon as I can get by a place where I can pick up a fleet air filter, I'm wanting to do that. That's why I'm not changing my air filter just yet. You said, I've heard you say on other shows before that the dirtier that the air filter gets, the more efficient it gets at stopping the dirt.
Yeah, it does.
It gets less efficient at pulling the air in.
Right. And occasionally what can happen with an older filter is they'll start to deteriorate a little bit and you'll get a breach somewhere that will allow some dirt in. But again, this number is nothing to be concerned about. Here's what's going on down at the bottom. We've got 100,000 plus miles on this oil. You don't add a lot. You know, a gallon every 10 or 15,000 isn't much. And what happens is over time, depending on how well the engine is running, over time, the combustion byproducts will start to overtake the oil. And that's really what's happening here. Nitration is an indication of some blow-by and some of the combustion getting down into the oil and starting to contaminate it. As that happens, your TBN will start to drop because you're creating an acidic environment in the oil, and the TBN is there to combat that acid. So, but as it combats the acid, we start to lose it. So that's what's happening with the base. The base is being depleted. Also, as that oxidation and nitration is getting in there, it will start to increase the viscosity of the oil. Think about, I know we don't have a lot of soot in here. Soot numbers actually look really good. But think about those byproducts getting into the oil, and they will start to thicken that oil, which is what increases the viscosity. So what you've got here is really a pretty normal sample for 100,000 miles, and it kind of tells us where the limit is going to be on this engine. Because the way it's running now, and I don't know, typically with the EGR engines, there's not a lot we can do to improve them. Some of the fuel mileage improvements that we talk about, the mufflers, the air filter, you know, making sure the charger cooler's tight, overhead's done, all of those things will also improve the combustion in the engine. When we do that, we're able to keep the oil cleaner longer. But there's nothing in here that would indicate anything is wrong with the engine. It's just a little dirty, and after 100,000 miles, it's starting to overcome the oil. But you still have, I mean, I wouldn't change this oil. I think you'll probably get one or two more filter changes. Which unit do you have? Which OPS?
I got the 10-inch, the Echo Pure.
Okay, so you're running just about 25,000 miles between samples.
My fuel economy has gotten a lot better, so I've been going up, doing it about 30, 35 now.
And that may be, I would try one more at 30,000 and just see.
Okay.
But everything here is a natural progression. There's nothing in here that indicates anything is wrong. And you've got 100,000 miles out of the oil. My guess is you're going to get 130 or more, which is really good.
Okay. Now, what about putting when I do a drain on this? Will I go longer on synthetic or synthetic blend? Which would you think I should do?
I like synthetic just because of the benefits, the fuel economy gains, especially coming into winter now, the cold weather starting on synthetic is fantastic, better hot protection. But what you're not going to get any more miles out of it. And the reason being is this oil isn't breaking down. It's simply being overcome by contaminants. And that will happen with synthetic oil the same way.
Okay. Now I heard some. You said something about, you know, if I wanted to go synthetic, I can just add, when I do my ads, just add synthetic, and it should naturally progress over to pure synthetic.
Yep. Yeah, you can do it that way. Nothing wrong with that at all. And you know, since you're using Rotella, the Rotella synthetic seems to be working just fine. It's easy to get, and it's pretty inexpensive. You just start putting in a gallon of Rotella synthetic. And what you're doing, actually, in the beginning, is you're creating your own blend.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, but everything here looks good, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing to get concerned about in this sample.
What does heat do to the oil? Does it break it down anymore? Is it, you know, because I'm running usually around 226 on my oil temperature.
It really doesn't. You know, it can create some byproducts, but nothing major. Oil really doesn't break down until we start getting to that, like, 400-degree temperature, which you're just never going to see in an engine.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine about that, and I told him that, well, you know, they run the oil up to higher temperatures and, you know, into the thousands to make fuel and stuff like that, and they refine it at that high temperature, so.
Yeah, we really see, you know, everybody's seen the commercials where we talk about thermal breakdown, and really don't, that really doesn't happen. I mean, oil doesn't break down until the, you know, at least like 350 degrees. So, in fact, engines that run hotter sometimes tend to run cleaner, and the oil will sometimes go longer. The problem that we see, it, and you see it somewhat here, is on the EGR engines, they're just dirtier. You know, if this engine was non-EGR, we'd probably get, you know, another 30 to 50,000 miles on top of this. But yours is still looking good, and I think you're going to be okay.
I am running through the next sample.
What's that?
I am running it in test mode.
Okay. And that may be helping some. I mean, if we keep that EGR valve closed, we keep that exhaust gas out of there, it helps some.
Yeah, a buddy of mine's got run his same engine, same truck, and his soot is at, I think, two something. And, of course, that's on a Speedco bench, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your soot is yeah, you're less than 1%. You can't beat that.
Yeah. All right. Well, as long as I'm doing everything all right, you know, they just don't never tell me when I need to change my oil, and that's what I was wondering. Do I need
No, the reason they haven't told you when to change it is because you don't need to change it yet. It's still good.
Okay. Well, that's what I need.
Let's, give me another call next after the next sample. We'll see where it goes, but you're at least good until then. I'm going to take a real quick break, and we will be right back. Stick around.
Do you have irregular tire wear and vibration? Need to get more miles out of your tires and your fuel tank? You need True Balance Wheel Centering Products. These patented products center the wheels back to the wheel stud. The result is increased tire life, increased fuel mileage, and the smoothest ride possible, period. Go to the website, www.trutru-bal.com, and see what True Balance has done for other drivers just like you. If you drive a truck, True Balance is a must. Call us today at 866-686-9285 and get your center on.
You know, we haven't talked about it in a while, but one of the things that can be really frustrating chasing down is tire wear problems. And I've just found over the years that instead of chasing it, if we attack everything at once and we get everything right, we can eliminate it and not have to mess with it anymore. And that's why we've put together some of the products and services that we have when it comes to tire wear. The way I see it is if we start new, start over, when we've got irregular tire wear, the first thing we have to do is get it aligned. And that's why we've brought in Mike Beckett of MD Alignment and his shops, because they will align it properly. Now, the thing is, don't change your tires before you go there. Let them see the wear. Get it aligned. Once it's aligned, then you can put on tires if you need them. I would also recommend replacing shocks at that point. And I would install the balance masters to handle balance issues and the true balance to handle centering issues. If you do that, you're not going to have tire wear anymore. You're not going to be chasing it. You'll get it right, and we can eliminate it. Also, part of that alignment would be making sure all the wheel bearings are properly adjusted. But don't leave out the true balance part of this to get those wheels and hub assemblies centered. Otherwise, it becomes very difficult to balance them with any product. If they're off-center, it's really tough to balance them with anything. If you have any questions, you can certainly give them a call. You can always check them out on the website, letstruck.com, under sponsors. And I want to thank them for sponsoring the podcast tonight. Let's go to Elvis in Iowa. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin. Good evening, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call. I got a question. It's about time for me to put on the turbo on.
Okay.
I had my turbo inspected yesterday. They said it's bad. And I was thinking if you have anything of that, I know Pismo Pablo has a turbo out.
Well, yes.
Does that make any sense to put that on instead of as opposed to a regular turbo on it?
The difference is, one of the things that we do with the Pittsburgh Power Turbo is we look at a couple modifications that they make. Polishing the assemblies in there so that the turbine itself actually spins easier and freer works well. That's part of what they do. And going to a larger turbine housing, not a bigger turbo, but a bigger housing. And what that allows is more airflow through the turbo with less restriction. So the idea of reducing exhaust restriction throughout the entire exhaust, the manifold, the turbo, and the muffler, to allow more airflow out of the engine, that will all improve fuel economy. Now, there's a little bit of a downside in that in a bigger housing, the turbo will spool up a little slower. And normally what they'll do is if when you're talking to them and you're thinking about it, they'll go through your engine's horsepower, what kind of weight you pull, what part of the country you run, and then they'll make a recommendation on the turbo. But, yeah, there is an advantage to running theirs.
Do you have a number for them that I can call them at?
Yes, I do. I'm going to put you back on hold, and I'll get that number out here in you know what? I normally know it right off the top of my head, but Lisa's going to give it to me here in just a second. I think I know it, but rather than give it out wrong, I'll wait, and we'll move on to another call. There it is, 724-360-4080. That's Pittsburgh Power, 724-360-4080. Let's go to Chicago. Harold, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Hey, just an update. Well, I got about 2,000 miles since I got that problem fixed with my tires. Then I talked to two shops, and they both said that it's probably a shock. If I haven't had the wheel bearings off or anything, it's pretty hard for them to get out of whack unless they've been messed with. So I just went ahead and got the shocks changed, and, well, thus far I haven't found no tire problems coming back. And the second thing,
Hold on. How long have you had this truck?
250,000 miles.
Okay. And this particular tire wear issue just started?
Yep. Like my last set of tires, they lasted like forever. Put these here brand new tires on. These tires, they only got maybe 75,000. and it started at one rib. They said if it was a very inside rib, then it could be a possibility of a bearing. But being it's one of the inner ribs, they said that it's most likely a shock problem.
Now, what shop was this?
Well, this is at the, one of the company shops that I work for. But I talked to two other tire shops before that at Love's.
I'm not convinced it's a shock.
All
I mean, it doesn't hurt to replace them because I think most of us don't replace shocks often enough. But shocks are one of those things that tire shops tend to blame a lot of things on. And again, I'm not saying we shouldn't replace them. We should.
Yep.
But it's usually not the cause of tire wear like this. Keep an eye on it. And if it continues, then call me back or by all means get to an MD alignment shop. Let them take a look at it.
All right. And the second thing, did you get your seatbelt on?
Do what now?
Did you get your seatbelt on?
Of course.
All right, good. Because I heard a statement on your favorite news broadcast segment on the XM Sirius radio.
Yeah.
They said, I can't remember which state it was up there in the Northwest. They're talking about adding a dollar onto their fuel tax, so there'd be a $1.26 tax. Then she made the comment, I can see a whole long line of trucks heading toward Nevada to get their fuel. that makes sense. Huh?
They're thinking about adding a dollar fuel tax?
Yep. I can't remember if she said it was in Idaho or Utah. I can't remember. Anyhow,
well,
she made the comment.
whoever was reporting obviously has no understanding whatsoever of fuel tax, because if a state raises its fuel tax rate, it has nothing to do with you purchasing fuel tax. It has to do with consuming fuel in their state. So if they raise their fuel tax, you are going to pay that fuel tax one way or another. If you drive in their state, you owe them the additional tax. It has nothing to do with where you buy your fuel. In fact, let's look at the opposite. If any state were to raise their fuel tax by a dollar, the entities that are really going to get hurt are the truck stops in that state, because they can no longer be competitive on their fuel price. Now, whoever was reporting is correct that people are going to flock to other states to buy their fuel, and they're all going to be wrong. In fact, if a state were to raise its fuel tax by a dollar, it would be my first choice, more than likely, because here's what happens. The vendor, the truck stop, has no choice. They have to charge the tax. In order to be competitive, they have to discount their fuel as much as they possibly can. They would end up with one of the cheapest fuel prices in the nation, I believe. That's all speculation, but it just shows a real lack of understanding for the system. We talk about this all the time. So, interesting. It would be very interesting to see what would happen if they actually did that. Let's head off to Arizona to talk to our Fair Tax Ambassador. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Fair Tax Now, Remember November.
Boy, it's getting close.
Listen,
too.
I wanted to jump in on this podcast because I didn't know if I'd be able to get in later on tonight when you have Todd on the live show. And
yeah.
You're going to be talking to him about the FedEx change in their contracts, and they're requiring their owner operators and contractors to all get some kind of a entity, like what is it they're requiring, that you actually incorporate or get some kind of LLC or something?
Incorporation, they're not even allowing LLCs.
Just corporations. Wow.
Just well, corporate. And another big change. I'll let you get to that, but I want to. That's one change, and that was the one everybody focused on, including the contractors. They all jumped on that. Why do we have to be incorporated? Typical meeting when I was there, everybody complaining about the little stuff. And what the real issue was, that's going to hurt far more of these contractors. Incorporation is fairly easy. If it's done right, pay somebody else to do it. It's not that big of an expense, and it's not that big of a deal. It does change your accounting, makes your accounting more expensive. But again, we can get past that. And when it comes right down to the numbers, not that big of a deal. Here's the big deal. They are also going to, it's required now that if you have drivers, which the majority of our contractors do, we're almost all multiple truck owners. If you have drivers, they will be paid as employees now. No more calling your drivers independent contractors. That's the big change, in my opinion. That's the one that'll cost you a fortune. I mean, if you're getting away with calling your driver an independent contractor, first of all, you're not paying workers' comp on them. In some states, that's 20%. 20% of payroll in some states for workers' comp. You're not paying Social Security or Medicare, there's another 7.65% of payroll. You're not paying state unemployment or federal unemployment. That's another couple percent up to, at least that's capped. But we're talking about
Social Security split.
Yeah. So altogether, we're easily talking about adding 25% of your payroll cost to your expenses. So whatever your payroll currently is for your drivers, figure you're going to add another 20 to 25% on top of that to cover all these costs.
And all of this is to satisfy the IRS.
Absolutely. This is all about the IRS, yeah.
Because of this draconian, multi-layered, progressive income tax, 67,000 pages, which nobody understands.
Nobody, including the people that are currently writing the rules. When they write them, they can't explain them.
Not only can they not explain them, but they go out there and break them and say they didn't know.
They didn't understand. I don't understand. How do you expect me to understand
those
rules?
At least three people in the current administration who are involved directly in the process of writing tax law have been caught actually underpaying their taxes because they said they didn't understand the law.
And you know what? Their underpayment of taxes is sometimes more than any of us will even pay in tax in 5 years.
Wow.
Because we're talking about such big numbers. And then they explain it as though they didn't understand it. And you know what? It's one of the few statements that they make that I actually believe them. I agree.
Yeah.
You don't understand it. And because it's so difficult to interpret and to understand, all of us will try to push the limits. I have for years. I try to push the limits on what I can get away with. I don't want to pay one penny more than I need to. And if
you can't
interpret the rules clearly, I'm going to try to interpret them my way then.
And you can justify pushing the limits because no matter how bad you push the limits, you've still missed a lot of deductions that are hidden somewhere in that 67,000 pages. So you're really not doing anything immoral or unethical because you're probably still overpaying.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's bound to be some more deductions you could have taken in those 67,000 pages somewhere, or some preparation you could have done during the tax year to take advantage of some of the loopholes found in those 67,000 pages if you understood them.
Exactly.
So you're not doing
anything
immoral or unethical.
no, I'm probably paying more tax than I should. Here's the thing,
sure.
When it comes down to paying more or less tax than we should, nobody really knows how much tax we should pay.
So basically all of us are subject to fine or imprisonment or some sort of enforcement action by the IRS just simply because of our ignorance, because you know the number one rule when it comes to law enforcement is that ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Nope. The only difference when it comes to the IRS is the severity of the penalties you will face. And what I mean by that is they can impose penalties up to 100% of the underpaid tax. So
right.
if you made a mistake and you underpaid your tax by $5,000 for the year, they could assess penalties up to an additional $5,000 on top of the tax. And what determines the penalty is intent. If they can prove that you knowingly defrauded the government, you absolutely understood the rules, you knew what you were doing, you made up numbers, and you were being fraudulent, they can impose taxes up to 100%. They very seldom do that because most of the time we can at least plead ignorance and say, I really didn't get it. I made a mistake. I didn't understand. And then the penalties are, you know, more in the 10, 15, 20% range usually.
I don't see how we couldn't claim ignorance 100% of the time, because there's no way we could know the whole law and what our taxes are supposed to be. Listen,
hey,
I understand you got – go ahead. What are you called with?
I was just going to say one more thing when it comes to how screwy this is. People always ask me, you know, how long can I be audited? Technically, you can only be audited for 3 years. 3 years from the time you filed the return or until the tax is paid in full. So if the tax isn't paid, yeah, technically, and here's why. That's an audit that would be looking for mistakes or over-claiming deductions. If you made some sort of a clerical error, a mistake in the way you interpreted something, or you overstated your deductions, they only have 3 years to audit for those things. If they suspect that you underreported your true income, do you know how long they have to audit you then?
10 years.
Forever.
Forever? Like murder?
No limit. There's no limit. If they believe that you underreported your income, there is no limit. There's no time on there. How do you ever protect against that?
I don't know, because I don't even keep records forever.
Nobody does. I mean, I tell people after 3 years, get rid of it. Hopefully you're not lying on your income. If you are, you're screwed anyway, I guess.
Yep.
So my tip for the evening. Anybody who wants to cheat on taxes, never underreport your income. Always report all the income. If you want to get your tax down lower, just overestimate your expenses.
Ah, good tip.
Yeah,
if you
I
want
thought
to cheat.
So. That's right, if you want to cheat.
Okay. What if you just want to pay less taxes?
make less money.
Another good tip.
Yeah, I know. I'm just full of good tips tonight, huh?
I hear you. Have a good night, Kevin.
All right, good stuff. Let's move on. Let's get to Chris in Indiana. Welcome to the program. Let's try. Everything just shifted on me. Let's try Tim in Mississippi. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
I just wanted to call in because I ran across something that I thought you might find interesting. The concept of reconditioning trucks, I hadn't really even thought about until you brought it up. And I came across a couple of YouTube videos for the Alderham Corporation, which I didn't know. These videos were probably made in, like, the late 1960s, just based on the way people are dressed and stuff. Anyway,
okay.
The Alderham Corporation, what they've been doing every 3.5 to 4 years is reconditioning the London inner-city double-decker buses. And
is that
if
right?
You watch these, and if you watch these videos, they have an enormous setup. I mean, obviously they're doing them in assembly line function to remove the bus from the chassis, you know, recondition the chassis, recondition the bus, and put the whole thing back together. And according to the videos, they put out about a bus an hour, like complete out the door. I don't know. I just thought it was very interesting. You might want to take a look at it.
Wow. Yeah, I'd like to see that. You know, this makes complete financial sense. But this is one of those things that we really have to change our thinking about. And it's not, it's really not a new concept. I didn't know they were doing this on these buses. I do want to go see that. But the airlines have been doing this for decades. I mean, you know, we're flying around in 747s that are 30 years old or more. And I mean,
kind
some of the originals
about
are...
It. It's kind of scary when you think about it.
Yeah, but they have such a fantastic program of keeping that thing like new. And UPS has been doing it with trucks forever. And I was just thinking about this the other day. There was a time where I tried to get some information on UPS's program to see how they were doing it. Now, they were a privately held company for years, so you couldn't get any information. That's changed. So I may go back and look at that again to see if I can find out, because they keep their trucks for a very, very long time. Now, we have another huge incentive to do this now. You know, not only is there, well, the emissions. I mean, even if we set emissions aside, it still makes more sense to completely recondition a vehicle we already own than it does to buy a brand new one. I mean, financially, you can make the numbers work. Throw the emission-related problems on top of this, and this starts to make a lot of sense. But in the real world, is anybody willing to spend $75,000 or whatever number we come up with? I mean, we set a budget on our first project of $60,000, and I'm making some hard decisions already about what we can and can't do to this truck. But is anybody willing to spend $75,000 on a truck that's 10 years old? I don't know. Emotionally, it's a tough decision, but when you start to look at it logically and financially, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree.
So I will, I'll take a look at that. I had no idea they were doing that on the buses. That sounds interesting.
Okay, you have a good night.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to, let's try Chris in Indiana this time. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you tonight?
Doing great. What's on your mind? Yep.
Well, I recently put a new set of drives on my truck. I've got an 09 Columbia, 317,000 miles on it. I went from the Bridgestone M720s to the Michelin XD10s and was wondering, am I going to see an improvement in my fuel mileage or a decrease?
You're actually going to show a decrease. You know, most of the time you hear me talking about moving from a certain Bridgestone to a certain Michelin, and 9 times out of 10 when you make that move, you're improving your rolling resistance. In this case, you didn't. You had one of the better tires that Bridgestone makes, the M720. The rolling resistance is 110, which is really good for a drive tire. The XDN, now did you go to the XDN or the XDN2?
The XDN2.
The XDN2, let me find that one. The rolling resistance on that tire is 139.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty big jump in the wrong direction.
Now, I was looking at, you know, the fact that I run all 48 states, and I liked the footprint that the XDN2 gives versus the Michelin 720 or even the XDAs. Simply for the fact that, winter's coming up, I do run all 48, and it looked like the footprint was going to be better for handling the ice and snow.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it's been, I used to do ice and snow with all position tires. And I understand that there are some cases where we wouldn't want to do that, but my first choice would certainly be the XDA Energy, and I don't think there would really be any problem with traction. No question, the XDN2 is a nice, aggressive tread, should do really well in deep snow, but there's no question you are going to give up fuel economy over the Bridgestone. The M720 is actually a great tire from Bridgestone as far as rolling resistance goes. Let's go to Florida. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
I've got an oil sample I did with OPS, and Lisa was supposed to email that over to you.
She did. I'm looking at it now. This is a 60 series Detroit. What year?
02.
02, and am I correct? I'm guessing it has just under 200,000 miles on an in-frame?
Yes.
And is there 30,000 miles on this oil or 45,000 miles?
There's 30,000 on this oil.
Okay,
almost 29,821, so yeah, 30,000 on this oil.
Got it. Okay.
Well, I got a baseline is what I did. I sent in two samples at one time is probably what you're seeing.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense then. Got it. So the first two samples were really at the same time. Okay. Are you using any kind of an additive?
No, I'm not at all.
Okay. I have a feeling Rotella changed something in their formulation. The lab keeps flagging it for magnesium, which is an additive, so it's nothing to worry about. Iron, they flagged at a level 1, but it's pretty reasonable climb. It is a tad high for this many miles, but part of that could be we're actually still seeing some break-in. I know it's 200,000 miles, but, early on in an engine, you'll tend to see some elevated metals, and this isn't elevated that high. So we'll just keep an eye on that. Probably what concerns me more than the iron for this particular engine is the soot being at 1.4. That's actually kind of high for a pre-EGR Detroit with a bypass filter on it. I would normally expect to see less than 1%.
Okay.
And I would really expect to see down in the, 0.3, 0.4 range. I would take a look at a couple things. Since the in-frame has been done, how many has the overhead been run on this?
Yes, I just bought this truck in April, but I got all the paperwork on the in-frame being done in it. It would have been April 12th is when the overhead was ran on.
April 12th, okay. We're good there. Charge air cooler been tested?
Yes, yep, it's got Duralite on it. And I did put, right when I bought the truck in April, I put new air cleaners in it also.
Okay, paper filters?
Yes.
Okay. How about exhaust? Is this the factory muffler?
I just put here with this oil, I probably put the Pittsburgh Power mufflers on it, I want to say, probably about 10,000 miles ago, if that.
Okay. What would be interesting, a lot of times soot will be caused by excessive back pressure in the exhaust is one of the possibilities. We've been through the other. Valves are adjusted right. charge air cooler's working tight, air filters are new. So exhaust restriction is one of the other possibilities when it comes to soot. And again, this is not a number to be concerned about as far as the condition of the oil. That oil is designed to handle as much as 4 or 5% soot without causing any problems. What I'm looking at is just based on, you know, knowing these engines, that that number is a little elevated, so we start to look at reasons why. It'll be interesting to see if it comes down now with the muffler. The other thing that would help is the next time you need filters, go to the fleet air filter. If we allow better airflow through the engine, in and out, we can usually increase the combustion, get a better burn in the cylinder, which lowers a lot of the byproducts that contaminate the oil. But overall, this sample looked really good.
Okay. There was quite a bit of idling on that oil also. Now this time of year, I'm not idling near as much at all. Now, would that affect the hood soot at all? Or?
Yep. Yeah, anytime we idle, all of the combustion byproducts get worse because we're not. Now, if we kick it up to a higher idle and we keep the engine at full operating temperature, then we usually don't see that. But you burn a lot of fuel when you do that, too. So
I always do bump it up. Every time I idle overnight, I do bump the RPMs up.
Okay. And that will keep that down somewhat. So that could be a part of this. And again, like I say, it'll be interesting to see the next sample after the muffler's been on there.
Now, one more quick question I had. I don't know if you've seen on there. I had to add 2 gallons. What had happened is I blew the turbo, and they never, when I had the turbo replaced on the side of the road, they never took the cap out on the drain line, put my turbo together. Then, obviously, the oil had to have somewhere to go, so it went all through the charge air cooler then.
Okay.
Do you think that the turbo, the fins... I guess I don't see how the fins rubbing on the housing would cause any iron to get into the system, but is that possible?
Let me think. Not that I can see, no. And again, don't get too hung up on this iron number. With the number of miles on the engine and the oil, this is fairly normal.
Okay. So yeah. Overall, you still think it's a good tight motor then, and you know, just kind of keep an eye on the soot. And
yep, yeah. That if I had to pick anything that concerned me at all, it would be the soot, and it's not concerning me much because it's still fairly low.
Okay.
All right.
Greatly appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, the reason I pay so much, I mean, nine people out of ten who would look at that sample who understand samples wouldn't even mention the soot because it's well within reasonable limits. The only reason I mention it is because it is pretty closely tied in with combustion and fuel economy. And when we look at engines that get really good fuel economy, we tend to see really low soot numbers. So when it starts to get elevated, I start to look at performance issues that maybe we could improve on and get that number down. But again, don't mistake the fact that I think that soot number is a problem. It's really not. It's just I use it as an indicator of combustion efficiency more than anything. Let's go to Kentucky. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
Yeah, I had a question. I'm thinking about starting my own business in a way. I'm not exactly familiar with how self-employment tax is supposed to work. I mean, I know I basically be the employer, so paying both sides of the deal. But, like, how much should I really think about setting aside for that, and how often does that occur?
You will pay all of your taxes as estimated taxes, and you pay them quarterly. So you're going to pay them 4 times a year, but what I recommend is that you put them aside weekly so that you don't get behind. Now, your self-employment tax, which is both halves of the Social Security and Medicare tax. Whereas an employee, you pay half, the employer pays half. Now that you're self-employed, you have to pay it all. It is 15.3% of net business income. Now, the tough part is trying to figure out what your net business income is. I mean, we almost have to do a tax return. We have to go in and deduct everything that's allowed: fuel, maintenance, tolls, repairs, per diem, depreciation. It's tough, and to try to figure that out every week, what your net would be out of every week's check, is way too much work and almost impossible. So what I recommend, what I've done over the years, is I've looked at literally thousands of owner-operators, and I've come up with a pretty good average that will keep you safe when it comes to setting aside some tax money. And that number is 8% of whatever you gross. Don't take any deductions off. Whatever you gross, just take 8% every week and set it aside. Now, that is to cover your federal income tax and your self-employment tax both. And if you're in a state with a state income tax, you might want to make it 9%, and that would probably cover all your state income tax as well.
Okay. Are there any good accounting programs you know that might kind of help ease this a little bit as far as being able to keep track of the expenses or whatnot, or is this just kind of, yeah, figure out myself, see what works?
No, you don't necessarily have to figure it out yourself. I would either hire a company that does strictly owner-operators like ATVS, or if you're good at numbers and good at accounting, you can do some of this yourself. Right now, my recommendation would be QuickBooks. Hopefully starting next year, my recommendation will be the program we're putting together. We're just not done yet. Let's go to New Jersey. Sully, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dave, sir.
Hey there.
I have a question about, I work for FedEx Ground. I own a couple of tractors. I was curious how much would be increasing the fuel mileage if I go from a tandem axle to a single axle on a tractor.
You know, typically we see as much as 1 full mile per gallon, and that is really tough to get a full mile per gallon out of any modification. But what happens here is you get multiple benefits if you do this right. We get decreased rolling resistance. We get decreased mechanical resistance. We get decreased weight. And we get better aerodynamics because, as you're aware, with a tandem axle, it's next to impossible to get those trailers up tight to the back of the cab or the sleeper. When we convert to a single axle, we can get the trailers up nice and tight and really improve aerodynamics. So between all the multiple benefits, we get somewhere from about 6/10 to a full mile per gallon, depending on speed and operation and some other things. And then you also have the decreased cost because now you have half as many drive tires, half as many brakes, don't have power divider and axle issues. So in my opinion, it's probably the biggest single thing you could do to improve your bottom line, pulling for FedEx. Speaking of which, on the live show coming up in 30 minutes, I'm going to have on Todd Amon from ATBS, and we're going to be talking about the changes at FedEx, so stick around for that. Thanks for joining me, and we will see you in a little bit. And again, thanks to True Balance.
Do you have your regular tire wear and vibration? Need to get more miles out of your tires and your fuel tank? You need True Balance wheel centering products. These patented products center the wheels back to the wheel stud. The result is increased tire life, increased fuel mileage, and the smoothest ride possible, period. Go to the website, www.true-bal.com, and see what True Balance has done for other drivers just like you. If you drive a truck, True Balance is a must. Call us today at 866-686-9285 and get your center on.